your patients have access to the best standard of care. I encourage you all to check it out. And remember, health is a human right.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
And welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host this evening. Our topic is, should police unions exist? We're excerpting remarks from a panel discussion hosted by Portland Jobs with Justice, June 29th of last year, moderated by Justin Norton Kurtzen, staff with Portland Jobs with Justice, and including Deborah Hall with the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, Candy Luisa Herrera, a organizer with the Washington Education Association, and Young Nam, who's a teacher with the Portland Association of Teachers and the Portland Metro People's Coalition.
Portland Jobs with Justice is a coalition of over 100 labor, community, faith, and student organizations that work together to fight for workers' rights and economic, racial, and gender justice. So here at Jobs with Justice, we have the organization, I don't think, has really taken a position per se specifically on whether or not police unions should exist. I'm not gonna speak a whole lot about that myself directly. Hopefully others will. We at JWJ do strongly believe in the need for extensive and substantial police reform. And we have a history of working on that. We supported the first round of Black Lives Matter protests led by Don't Shoot Portland. We've organized Black Trans Lives Matter events throughout the years. We're part of the network of local organizations that successfully fought to get Portland out of the JTTF, the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Supported Occupy ICE and continue to support efforts to get ICE out of our communities. And currently, we've enthusiastically endorsed the demands of the Portland African American Leadership Forum and Unite Oregon to cut at least $50 million from the Portland Police Bureau's budget and reinvest that money back into the local Black community. And we're an active part of the police reform network that's working to use contract negotiations between the city and the Portland Police Association to win more transparency and accountability around issues of use of force and bias-based policing. So the brutal public murder of George Floyd by police and their senseless execution of Breonna Taylor as she was sleeping in her bed, it sparked what could really only be called a rebellion. And there have been other matches and sparks in the past, right? I mean, Trayvon Martin, Freddie Gray, Kendra James, Michael Brown, and others. But this moment is unique, not only in as the militancy and the size and the endurance of the current protests against systemic police racism and violence, but also in the general support from the public and the willingness of politicians to take action around defunding the police and other reform efforts. Even just a month ago, the idea of defunding or abolishing the police really would have been seen as radical, extremist, and fringe. And now defunding is not only happening in cities across the country to various extents, but in Minneapolis, for example, they're actually considering disbanding the entire police department in order to create a community-centered, nonviolent alternative. Can folks please mute your microphones? Thanks. Appreciate it. So this really truly does seem like a moment where almost anything's possible if we keep pushing in the streets and continue to organize. And labor has not been totally silent in this moment or leading up to it. While individuals, you know, like Trumka and others that are kind of high up in the echelons of the labor movement have spoken out in support of police unions, others are demanding change. We here at Jobs with Justice are just one example. Also here locally, last year, the Oregon AFL-CIO passed a resolution encouraging its affiliates to engage in campaigns around criminal justice reform, specifically citing police misconduct and lack of accountability in the resolution. CWA Local 7901 last year followed up that with a resolution in support of the Police Reform Network and the contract negotiation efforts that are going on. The Association of Flight Attendants passed a really amazing strong resolution on June 5th in support of Black Lives Matter, police reform, and criminal justice reform. It also committed them to addressing their own role in systemic racism and fighting against systemic racism. And it called for an end to police attacks on protesters, committed the AFA to push for an end to militarization of police. Called on labor councils to kick police out of unions if they don't reform themselves. It was a really, really extensive and strong resolution. The Writers Guild of America East followed that up with a resolution asking the AFL-CIO to kick out the International Union of Police Associations. Then last week, the Martin Luther King County Labor Council voted to expel the Seattle Police Officers Guild. Right, all of this amazing stuff is happening in labor. Around police reform and around the issue of whether or not police should have unions in the first place and whether they should be in our unions. So because this is such an important moment and movement, and because so much is possible right now, because unions and union members are already organizing and taking action around police reform, we felt it was important and necessary to have a conversation here locally among Jobs with Justice members, among union members, and talk about the current moment, about Black Lives Matter and racial justice, about what's possible with police reform, about whether police unions should exist, and what role we as union members and our unions should play in this movement. So this is a really big and broad conversation. We're really not intending to limit it at all to just like whether police unions should exist, even though that's the title. We really want to explore all of the facets of this topic and hope that this will be just the first in many events that we help bring together and make up this conversation. So now I'm going to introduce the panel members. They'll each have like 5-10 minutes to talk about their own thoughts on all of these questions that are facing labor and unions around police reform and racial justice. Deborah Hall, also with the Oregon Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, member of the retirees for AFTPCC-FCE Local 3922. Welcome.
The Black community has a very tenuous relationship with the police here. You know, everyone thinks everything is well and everything is good, but you know, folks, it's no surprise that things are the way they are. Just look at the Constitution. For this, the original Constitution for the state of Oregon and for the Oregon Territory. I don't know if most folks realize that this territory was not set aside for Black people at all. You know, Oregon had the only Constitution that had an exclusion clause that excluded Negroes, actually excluded Chinese mulattoes. You know, I don't know if folks also realize what the background history of the police are. You know, basically came into being at the end of slavery to, you know, basically kind of round up black people up and kind of keep us in line and, you know, throw folks in jail and get that free labor back, you know. What's heartbreaking is to move forward to now where we have unions, and I love the fact that I've had an opportunity to be in a union, because that is what has made the difference in my life, okay? As an adult, as a young person, I've had a pretty secure life. I'm not gonna say that everything has gone well, but because I've been represented by a union contract and have some standing and have had decent jobs where I've had decent benefits, it's really hard to see my police brothers and sisters, and I'm talking about my black brothers and sisters, you know, especially acting out in these heinous, violent ways, you know. Comes to mind one evening, the week that 45 was elected, we marched every night that week. And one night, it was late, early in the morning, and I found myself on the Morrison Bridge. Standing next to me was a news reporter from Channel 8 News and the cameraman. And the police were trying to stop us from going over the Morrison Bridge. And there was a black police officer who was basically, and I could tell that he was frustrated. You know, it's a pretty tense situation. And I was trying to put myself in their spot, because on my job, I don't have to worry about people are going to get in my face. I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to pick up the phone, go out on a call and have some, you know, totally horrendous situation that could go bad and possibly cost me my life. But what I couldn't understand was the hate and the animosity in his eyes. And I was trying to talk to him, because here's what I was saying to him for him to realize, you know, here we are, brother and sister union members standing up here at 1 o'clock in the morning as black people fighting over this bridge. And so now our leaders are, you know, people that have, say, dominion over us in our jobs are sitting at home with their feet up, taking it easy. And here we are, union members at each other's throats, fighting, arguing, bickering, okay? When at the end of the day, we want the same things, we're fighting for the same things. Why aren't we protecting each other? Why are you ready to bash my head in for stepping on some pavement? Where is the humanity? You know, I don't understand where that loss of humanity is. One other thing that I also realize is that when you're in an environment with people, we may use different vernacular, but there's a gang mentality. There's a gang mentality in your household. There's a gang mentality at work. There's a gang mentality in your union, you know, whereas as you work with people, you need to know people. You bring them a little more of yourself to situations, and you want to protect them each other, you know, like family. And I can imagine that it's pretty fierce. I'm in the police force because I'm, again, what I have to realize is that my life is not in danger on my job. I might fall down the stairs. I might fall off a chair, something like that. But I'm not going to pick up the phone, go out, I'm on a call, and perhaps lose my life. So I try to think of those things, you know. I want these brothers and sisters to be able to have a union, because the union is the difference for working people. The union is the difference. But our unions do need to be fair. I think the way how police unions exist today, they need to be dismantled and start all over. Because how can you patch this system? How can you patch what 200 years of whatever has happened? It's got to start new. And so I applaud the young people for having the strength, for having the passion, and for having the heart for staying out there on those streets. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me here this evening.
If you just tuned in, this is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. You're listening to Labor Radio and a panel discussion on Should Police Unions Exist?
So let's then move on with the program. And our third speaker on the panel, who is Candy Luisa Herrera. Hey, Candy.
Hey there. So I appreciate how much folks have spoken so personally about this. I'm a formerly undocumented immigrant. I could speak personally about this, but I actually kind of wanted to give more of a political view. So, you know, my perspective is that of the reforms that people are seeking, they can't be done locally. Defunding is well-intentioned. We should absolutely support defunding. as one way of pushing back against police unions, but it's limited in terms of a permanent solution. They will be, it is my opinion that, these funding streams will be, these budget lines will be refunded as soon as the economy jumps back. But we absolutely should support them, if only as a way to kind of mitigate the onslaught of cuts to social services that we're going to see as a result of the depression we're experiencing. So if we can take away kind of the tanks and the grenade launchers, and maybe use it to backfill some, you know, keep our public parks, keep our mental health services, you know, this really, you know, the social safety net that can be provided at the municipal level or at the county level, we should absolutely do that. And of course, I know one of the demands is to reroute that funding to support Black communities. And so, you know, it's my opinion that this could only be done legislatively, right, at the state level. I say this as someone who's been negotiating contracts, union contracts, for years. So at the state level, there would have to be, well, first there would have to be a movement of people on the ground pushing legislators to pass a bill that would restrict their right to bargain, due process, use of force in the investigatory process. So for instance, just to give you some example, this is kind of all around the country. They bargain, police unions bargain at the local level about when they'd have to give a statement after having potentially committed a crime and killed a person, conditions under which they would give that statement, breaks that they'll take. They bargain restrictions on releasing footage. So, you know, including the name and the photo of the officer involved. So, you know, after police have murdered another Black person, you see a photo of them, right? You know, sometimes police, if it's an unfortunate case that person has a police record, right, because of the pervasive racism in our criminal justice system, they'll release the mugshot of the person who was killed by police. But they won't, they bargain at the local level about how much of the police officer involved information can be released. They bargain the ability to have kind of to have a collective narrative. So if there's a couple of them, they bargain the ability to kind of talk to one another and come up with a story so that goes on the official record after an incident. And so, you know, I could talk a little bit about what Portland Police has and what I was able to find, but you know, my point about talking about all this is that they're never, ever, 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 ever gonna voluntarily give all that up. And so, you know, they're never going to voluntarily allow for something like a community oversight committee over incidents with deadly use of force. And so it kind of has to be done at the state level. And so when you talk like that, unions, and particularly public sector unions, you know, it invokes this fear, right? And if there's something that I know about talking to union members and having one-on-one conversations, that you never want to invalidate people's fear. You never want to be dismissive, right? And so I understand, you know, the fear in that unions in Oregon are very, very weak, right? You absolutely saw that with PERS. There was a Democratic supermajority and, you know, you still lost. Now public sector workers in the state of Oregon have a bifurcated pension system. But there's two ways to kind of look at this. One, you can think of it just kind of like at the state level, you can just take away all the extra stuff they have that we don't get, right? That public sector employees, we don't get to negotiate how many breaks we need to take. And, you know, we can always call a caucus or an investigatory conference, but that's part of having a union, right? We don't get to just get to take a break to like clear our heads. And so, you know, they have pensions above and beyond other public sector workers. Police officers have their own pensions. And so, you know, we're just kind of trying to chip away at all the extra things that they've been able to bargain that nobody else gets. That's one thing. Another thing is that, you know, the reasons why Oregon's are weak, why unions are weak in the state of Oregon is that you just need to go on strike. That's one way of immediately making your union super duper strong, is just going on strike and going on strike whenever you need to, right? And that's pretty worldly advice. A lot of folks, labor authors, activists are going to tell you the same thing. You got to go on strike. And so, you know, I understand the fear, but we can't allow that fear to kind of pollute the way that we talk about this, right? When we talk about state violence, this problem, this pervasive problem of state violence against against Black people. And so, you know, you see that kind of that fear enter the discourse, unfortunately, of what we're able to kind of, you know, what we read about. I mean, Bill Fletcher Jr., he's a great guy. He's done a lot for the labor movement. He released an editorial not that long ago saying, you know, police unions aren't the problem, racism is the problem, which I, you know, he's, again, he's a great guy. I strongly disagree with that. There's a couple folks doing research on how kind of the overlap between civilian deaths, particularly Black deaths, and police unions, and the rise of police unions. Rob Gilzo at the University of Victoria, he studied bargaining rights of police, but beginning from the late 1950s. So what, you know, what you found is when cops got the right to bargain, yeah, of course they make more money, everybody makes more money. But overwhelmingly it's the case that there was an increase in killings of civilians following the formation of police unions. And almost all of that increase were non-whites. And so what they basically bargained for was the protection of the ability to discriminate. You know, and there's no way to get around that. I mean, cop unions are absolutely the main barrier to reform. Quoting another article, the extension of the collective bargaining rights of Florida sheriff's offices led to an estimated 40% increase in violent incidents among sheriff's offices that elected to unionize. Come from the state of Florida. A study using data from America's 100 largest cities found that police protections created via union contract were significantly and positively correlated with the killing of unarmed civilians. That's different from the forthcoming paper that I talked about from Jill Zoe. So, you know, it's overwhelmingly the case that cop unions are the main barrier to reform, and there's no way to get around that. And then lastly, this is kind of the point that I really want to leave everybody on, which is that, you know, cop unions shouldn't exist because cops shouldn't exist, right? We should have the ability as a labor movement to conceptualize what public safety could look like aside from a guy with a gun that has the right to kill people and has all of these additional protections than everybody else. We should be able to have this conversation as a movement. And so that's really what's lacking in all this, at least that's my perspective, is this ability to have a radical union imagination. You know, there was a period of time when we were stronger. We were never that strong. Highest union density ever got was like, I think, 35% nationally. And so, you know, there was a period of time where we talked about stuff like universal basic income. We talked about universal health care. We talked about a 30-hour work week. FLISA was originally supposed to be Fair Labor Standards Act, which said the 40-hour work week was originally 30 hours, you know, the 40 was just so we could pass it. But, you know, these were things that we actually need to talk about, that we actually used to talk about, like they're real things. Universal income has kind of entered the, or I'm sorry, universal health care has entered the discourse because of Bernie Sanders, but it shouldn't be Bernie Sanders. Like, it should be us. We should be the people talking about this. And so, you know, if we continue this conversation, I'd really like to make it so that, you know, we have somebody who's able to address what society could look like without police, right? What police abolition and prison abolition, for that matter, could really look like. And those are the conversations that we need to be having as a movement, is really getting back to the point where we can think of the world in a different way. So that's the end of my comments.
Myung Nam, you are up. Take it away.
Labor has an important role to play in the movement for Black lives and against oppressive policing, even if some union leaders and members hesitate. Police have clearly displayed their reactionary politics and racism in their support for a billionaire-backed Trump. The Black Lives Matter movement is happening, and labor must not neglect it. Many people in the movement may not know how unions and collective bargaining works, and opposing oppression by the police could turn into opposing unions. Everyone in the working class should have unions as well as Just Cause, as they do in Europe. Labor can help activists navigate that complexity while also not validating mainstream narratives against unions per se. Police unions are totally different from our unions and the working class organizations. In addition to the persistent racism and brutality, they are, one, authorized to use deadly force and kill over 1,000 Americans each year; two, have special legal protections like the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights in many states and qualified immunity; and three, have a long history of opposing the working class and unions. The president of Portland's police union admitted that police should be held to higher standard because they carry guns, can restrict individual liberties, and use deadly force. Police unions are political opponents of the working class and opposed to the interests of the working class and BIPOC peoples. Their PACs usually support candidates that align with the interests of local business associations, landlords, etc., and right-wing politicians. For example, Portland Police PAC gave money against the DA for the People in San Francisco and joined the Landlords PAC as top donors to Loretta Smith, who ran against Commissioner Hardesty in 2018, who has been a long champion of police accountability. Police have a history based in slave patrols and attacking the working class. The PPA also raided an AFSCME local for emergency call workers last year. Police unions shape the political economies of our cities in regressive and oppressive ways, and this ultimately traps us in using police to respond to social and economic problems that cost us all enormous sums and prevent creating a society more in the interests of the working class. We will be facing a horrible recession and austerity, and that will threaten the working class, especially people of color. The injustice and high cost of policing and incarceration also makes dealing with anti-tax policies on politics even more difficult, and not only harms the working class, but harms public sector unions especially. Police ultimately serve the interests of the ruling class. They are not our enemies, but the tools of them. Like with the Green New Deal and just transition or single payer, we must not let rethinking public safety become a debate about oppression versus jobs or climate injustice versus jobs. We need to lead the way in a transition to a better future with good, socially beneficial jobs for all. And that involves much fewer police. Some might object and say that while the right wing is attacking the working class and unions, won't the same demands be made on our unions? No, police are unique, and by siding with the community and working class, we build support for our unions. Unions have a debt to pay to Black and Indigenous and people of color communities that we have allowed the ruling class to divide us from too many times in history. There may be a range of goals for labor in this movement at different times, from joining community-led efforts to intervene in city negotiations with police associations for contracts like we're doing here in Portland, that would allow officers to be disciplined and fired, to expelling police associations from the AFL-CIO. A better contract could even help well-intentioned officers do their jobs in the community and also be whistleblowers to abuse, because we know that there's widespread distrust of the police with everything that's going on. There's also a growing movement to defund the police and rethink public safety and create a people's budget that would be transformative, and it's seeming more and more possible each day of this historic uprising, with several examples in LA and other cities. Finally, no cop unions may not be the best messaging tactic. It's something that I've used a lot, but it brings up unnecessary debates at our stage now about whether cops should have unions. There are plenty of things we could do before making such a demand that would be difficult to win anyway and could only divide us right now and waste time. This could end up also being a legal battle rather than a political and organizing battle. There are many concrete specific demands now that would help without just calling for abolishing police unions, without all the bigger philosophical questions about police unionism or even abolition at this point. that all of us can probably agree on and work on and gain some real material benefits for all of us. I think before answering those kind of questions, we should ask, if cops are part of the working class, management are workers, but they're not part of the working class and they don't get to have unions. And I would say the same thing about cops. Personally, I don't think police unions should exist because many of the unique things about the police, if they were not to carry weapons and not have all those extra protections and immunities, I might not have a problem with them having a union, but as things exist now, I think it's just not right. Also, as several Black radical intellectuals have pointed out, like Bill Fletcher Jr., cops are not the problem, but they're merely the tools of the ruling class who are likely to use privatized security, like the Pinkertons in history, right, who used to be larger than the whole US Army, to do their bidding with even less accountability in the growing trend with card labor. So let's make sure that we understand who our real enemies are and fight against the abuse of the cops. Thank you.
That wraps it up for Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday, 6 to 6:30. And stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. I'd like to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Prison Pipeline and for KBOO by becoming a KBOO member today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $45,000 end-of-the-year drive goal. We're community-funded radio.